Hello, my name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Serving Notice, Rantoul Spike in Cases, Hog Plant Being Monitored Closely After Outbreak. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Rantoul. A sudden spike in COVID-19 cases in Rantoul has been linked to an outbreak at the hog processing plant, Rantoul Foods. As of Monday, there were 32 confirmed cases among Rantoul Foods employees, according to Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride. The number of total cases in Rantoul Monday also stood at 32, but not all Rantoul Foods employees live in Rantoul or even in Champaign County, Pride said. Rantoul Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said village officials were notified April 27th, that there were two confirmed COVID-19 cases at Rantoul Foods. The Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, CUPHD, took two immediate steps, establishing testing for employees at the plant and working with management to implement infection control measures, he said. The plant was permitted to reopen April 29th with the anticipation that additional testing would likely turn up more cases, Eisenhower said. The case count at the plant, had grown to 20 by this past weekend, he said. Pride said meat processing plants have already received guidance from the Illinois Department of Public Health and federal agencies because they're known to have outbreaks. Last week, the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union said at least 5,000 meatpacking workers and 1,500 food processing workers have been directly impacted by the virus, and 20 have died. Additionally, 22 plants, both union and non-union, have closed at some point in the last 2 months, impacting more than 35,000 workers, according to the UFCW. As part of its response to the outbreak at Rantoul Foods, the local public health district has gotten additional information to the plant and has been doing monitoring there, Pride said. We're working closely with them and we will monitor them closely, she said. Tracing close contacts of the infected workers at the plant was still underway Monday, Pride said. Rantoul Foods management couldn't be reached Monday by the News Gazette. Jerry Jacobson, Jerry with a J, the company's Director of Human Resources, Safety and Business Administration, told the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting that sanitation procedures have been reevaluated. The plant's common areas, restrooms, and locker rooms were being sanitized at least 3 times a day, and employees are given a health screening when they come to work and provided a mask, he said. Jacobson also told the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting that employees are being given the option to stay home if they don't want to come to work, regardless of whether they test positive for COVID-19, and more than 40% have chosen not to come to work. Pride said her staff tested 37 people at the plant and then referred other employees who want testing to Christie Clinic and Carl Seitz in Champaign. Plant employees have been asked to call public health for the authorization number to go to either of those sites for testing, she said. Doing all of the testing on site was the plan, Pride said, but there were too many people. It was too chaotic, no social distancing. Eisenhower said the recent spike in Rantoul cases hasn't caused a panic. Local residents recognize the source and that testing is now more abundant. Rantoul residents have been complying well with requirements to maintain social distances and have been wearing masks indoors at public places, as required, he said. I went to Walmart here on Sunday, Eisenhower said. I couldn't find anybody in there without a mask on. The next headline reads, Outdoor Recreation, Inching Toward Reopening, Area Cities Playing It Safe. This article is written by Ben Sichterman and is based out of Champaign. No doubles matches on the tennis courts, and no petting each other's pooches without permission at the dog park. Like local golf courses, which reopened last week with restrictions, other forms of outdoor recreation will reopen today in Champaign, cautiously. We need people to make sure they follow the restrictions, Champaign Parks Executive Director Joe DeLuce said. They could be closed back down if they don't abide by the rules. DeLuce said Monday, "We've got the go-ahead from Public Health, paving the way for today's reopening of the Champaign Dog Park, and by noon, the Hessel Park, Lindsay, and Sunset Ridge outdoor tennis courts. Clark, Eisner, and Spalding will open for tennis too, as soon as we can get the nets up," the park district noted in a Facebook post. Social distancing of 6 feet or more will be required at the dog park and on the tennis and pickleball courts, as well as other more sport-specific rules. For tennis, players shall not touch opponents' served balls, but return their opponents' balls by use of racket. DeLuce said more parts of the parks could be reopened in time, but that will be determined by the state and local public health districts. "We'd be willing to open more, but need to get their permission," DeLuce said. As Monday's daily COVID-19 briefing in Chicago, or at Monday's briefing, Governor J.B. Pritzker said Illinoisans wouldn't have to wait until May 30th, when the current stay-at-home order is due to expire, for full details of plans to reopen the economy and loosen social restrictions. But he cautioned against local municipalities defying the order, as East Peoria's mayor has said he intends to do in his city. "I was a businessman before I became governor, and I have to tell you that I would not want to defy the executive order because I believe that I would be taking on liability if I did that," Pritzker said Monday. If the situation improves, Rantoul may seek permission to reopen before Pritzker's order expires at the end of the month, Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said. But it will do so only after getting clearance from state leaders, he added. "We also understand, once those numbers begin to decrease, the governor is willing to look at allowance of current non-essential businesses to reopen under appropriate guidelines, and we will work with our state legislators to request that from the governor when the time is right," Eisenhower said. "Our hopes are we will see the numbers throughout our county decrease, and the governor will allow a phased-in reopen approach before the end of this current executive order." In Danville, Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said, if the stay-at-home order is extended past May, the city may reconsider its compliance. "We have no plans to reopen early at this point," he said. "However, should the SAH stay-at-home order continue beyond its current expiration date, that could change." Sydney Village President Jason Arrowsmith and Tuscola City Administrator Drew Howell said their towns will continue to follow the terms of the stay-at-home order, as did Champaign Mayor Deb Finan and Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin. "We're making plans internally for a phased reopening, and that will begin when it's considered safe to do so," Marlin said. "I don't think we've reached that point yet. We are following the governor's order and guidelines of IDPH and CUPHD, Finan said. "We are actively making plans for reopening, so we are ready when the order terminates." Savoy Village President Joan Dykstra said her town would also follow the order, but added, "I would encourage Governor Pritzker to revise his one-size-fits-all policy for downstate Illinois." And on the front page of the paper, there's a large picture of a woman tying a tennis net to a tennis pole. Champaign Park District's Jake Southey, S-O-U-T-H-E-Y. I'm sorry, that's a man. It's just he has long hair. He tightens up the net on one of the tennis courts while reinstalling the nets at Hessel Park and Champaign on Monday. Starting today, the courts will reopen for singles competition. The next headline reads, Carl at the Fields, expansion still part of plan. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Champaign. The Illinois Department of Transportation is planning to add stoplights to the I-57 interchange at Curtis Road, an increasingly busy entrance to the growing Carl at the Fields development. The lights will cost nearly $600,000, with federal and state funds covering all but an estimated $39,100 that the city would pay for, pending council members' approval at today's virtual meeting. The council will also vote on a preliminary plat for a new phase of the Carl at the Fields development, which could add another hotel, a restaurant and cafes, more retail space, and more apartments. The additions would be built west of the Haymakers. Hampton Inn, and retail apartment buildings that have been constructed just west of the main Carle and Health Alliance administrative building. The Brew Pub Distill had been planning to move there from downtown Champaign, but announced last week that its current site wouldn't reopen and its Carle at the Fields location was on hold due to the coronavirus pandemic. The majority of the public infrastructure needed for the new phase has already been built, according to a report prepared for the City Council. The preliminary plat was approved by the Plan Commission last month. The plat will facilitate the development of additional commercial and office land uses, which will generate additional revenue for the city and add amenities for the neighboring residents, city staff wrote. The stoplights at Curtis and I-57 are scheduled to be installed in late 2020 or early 2021. Traffic signals have always been part of IDOT's long-term plan for this interchange. When the interchange was constructed, there was not much development west of Interstate 57, according to the report for Council. With the recent office and commercial developments on the west side of Interstate 57, IDOT has been monitoring the traffic situation at the interchange and conducted a traffic signal warrant analysis. The analysis indicated traffic signals are now warranted. Once the stoplights are installed, IDOT will be financially responsible for them, according to the proposed agreement with the city. The city is only paying for a black coating of the traffic signal equipment and a system to detect emergency vehicles to change the lights for them. The agreement states that the city will pay no more than $48,875, or 25% over the estimated cost of $39,100. The city would pay for this from its capital improvement fund. And there are two pictures in the paper along with the story. One is of a stop sign in construction. A stop sign at the southbound I-57 exit ramp at Curtis Road in Champaign on Monday. That was taken by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. And there's a nice large aerial view of Carle at the Fields. This is a rendering of the fourth phase at Carle at the Fields development, which includes a possible hotel, bank, and apartments. The next headline reads, Illinois impact. For a day, deaths, hospitalizations down, Gibson City drive-in to reopen. Down, the number of Illinoisans hospitalized with COVID-19, with the 4,493 reported Monday, the fewest in 16 days. Also down, deaths statewide, with the 46 added Monday, lower than in any 24-hour period the last 15 days. But Governor J.B. Pritzker warned against reading too much into the figures. One day is not a helpful number to look at. Of Champaign County's 183 cases, 110 are considered recovered and 63 active. The updated totals by zip code are from 61866 in Rantoul, 32 cases. From the zip code 61822 in Champaign, 29 cases. From the zip code 61821 in Champaign, 27 cases. From 61820, also in Champaign, 24 cases. From 61802 in Urbana, 22 cases. From zip code 61801 in Urbana, 19 cases. From 61853 in Mahomet, 9 cases. From zip code 61874 in Savoy, 7 cases. From zip code 61863 in Posodum and 61873 in St. Joseph, 3 cases. From zip code 61849 in Homer and 61878 in Thomasboro and 61880 in Tolono, 2 cases. From zip code 60949 in Ludlow and 61877 in Sydney, 1 case. Also, missing movies on the big screen? All 3 of the area's indoor multiplexes remain closed, but Gibson City's Harvest Moon drive-in will reopen Friday. Set to be shown on the 2 screens, Trolls World Tour and Onward. The next headline reads, Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. That's J-I-M, and his last name is Rosso, R-O-S-S-O-W. The friendly folks who run Gibson City's Harvest Moon Drive-In were told the good news over the weekend. They could reopen May 8th, albeit with tight restrictions. We were surprised and elated about it, General Manager Ben Haroun, that's Harroun, said. We were in the process of becoming a temporary drive-through restaurant if we were not allowed to open as a theater for the time being, so we could survive until the restrictions were lifted. Starting Friday, Trolls World Tour on Screen 1, Onward on Screen 2. Harvest Moon will operate 7 nights a week. New guidelines were announced Monday night that will assure social distancing, from reduced parking to online food purchases to asking moviegoers to stay in their vehicle. We will start with a limited menu and strict procedures until we are allowed to move closer to the regular fun drive-in experience, Haroun said. The next headline reads, History. Area History. In 1920, streetcar service to Woodlawn Cemetery is to resume Sunday afternoon, and those who wish to visit the cemetery can use this special service. Beginning at 1 p.m., a special car will leave the corner of Main and Market Streets in downtown Urbana. Cars will leave every 20 minutes until 8 p.m. In 1970, a strike by U of I students in protest of U.S. intervention in Cambodia has been tentatively set for Thursday and Friday this week, but members of at least one U of I department started the strike early after four students at Kent State University were shot by Ohio National Guardsmen. In 2005, three people, all active in politics or community affairs, want to fill the District 4 seat on the Champaign City Council, recently left vacant when Jim Green resigned. Early applicants for the seat include Deborah Frank Finan, a 13-year Republican member of the Champaign County Board, Marcy Dodds, a member of the Champaign Public Library Foundation Board and a past board president, and Ken Urban, a member of the Green Party who has run previously for the Champaign Council and the County Board. International History. Today's highlight: on May 5, 1961, astronaut Alan B. Shepard Jr. became America's first space traveler as he made a 15-minute suborbital flight aboard Mercury capsule Freedom 7. Also on this date, in 1494, during his second voyage to the Western Hemisphere, Christopher Columbus landed in Jamaica. In 1925, schoolteacher John T. Scopes was charged in Tennessee with violating a state law that prohibited teaching the theory of evolution. Scopes was found guilty, but his conviction was later set aside. The next headline reads, MTD. $12 million in federal funding secured. Director, long-term whack on horizon. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Champaign. A federal grant in the amount of $12 million will help keep the buses running and nearly 375 MTD employees working. But even that won't be enough to offset revenue the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District expects to lose during the coronavirus pandemic, Managing Director Carl Natt said. It is absolutely a tremendous help, but the real financial impact hasn't even started yet, Natt, that's G-N-A-D-T, said Monday. What we're seeing now is a loss to the passenger revenues. But our state funding is based on state sales tax receipts. We can't even begin to calculate what the long-term whack we'll see to those funds will be. Because of that, Natt said the MTD is advocating for another round of federal relief that includes more funding for states and municipalities. The $12 million grant was part of the $2 million CARES Act approved in March. Natt said the funding was about three times what it normally receives from the federal government. The funding won't require a local match, according to U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Republican out of Taylorville, who announced the grant. The next headline reads, Ask the Admin. A daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. Question. With the Douglas County Sheriff refusing to enforce the stay-at-home order and wearing of masks, will there be any penalties in CU for not following the order? Answer. As with all COVID-19-related enforcement, both cities and CUPHD have started first with education and voluntary compliance. As we get used to our new normal, we need to make sure citizens have access to face coverings and understand the rules around using them. Thus, the immediate approach remains education and warnings rather than immediate penalties. Wearing a mask protects our community. It is a gift you are giving your neighbors, friends, and loved ones. The next headline reads, Opinion. Local Dems chairwoman at odds over party's cash and records. The two self-proclaimed chairwomen of the Champaign County Democratic Party are maintaining their public silence, but the battle over the chairwoman's position continues as supporters of Mariam Al-Rahim have filed a police report alleging that supporters of State Representative Carol Ammons improperly obtained more than $8,000 in party funds that were on deposit at Chase Bank in Champaign. The police report filed April 29th identified a 67-year-old woman as having closed banking account. The individual, apparently, is former Democratic Party Treasurer Jessica LaRosa, who was elected Party Treasurer by R. Rahim, supporters, and then suddenly resigned the post shortly afterward. LaRosa has maintained a public silence over the Ammons Al Rahim controversy and her role in it, but she did issue a one-sentence statement last week saying that the decision to resign was my own and had nothing to do with any alleged threats made by anyone. Communications between LaRosa and R. Rahim indicate that LaRosa's decision to step down from the treasurer's post came almost immediately after a conflict following the April 22nd Democratic Party convention called by R. Rahim. The R. Rahim convention came 1 week after the April 15th party convention orchestrated by Ammons' supporters so that Ammons could be elected chairwoman. LaRosa became the target of Ammons' supporters because, as treasurer under incumbent chairwoman R. Rahim, she had access to party records and funds. Unnerved by the attention, LaRosa wrote at 11:41 p.m. April 22nd, "I am being personally sued tomorrow morning. I did not sign on for this much drama, and am extremely upset." 12 minutes later, 11:53 p.m. April 22nd, LaRosa submitted her resignation as treasurer to R. Rahim and Ammons. "I resign my position as treasurer of the Champaign County Democratic Central Committee effective at 12:01 a.m. on April 23, 2020. I do not authorize any spending of funds from the Chase checking account nor the Vanguard account." Keeping watch, Al Rahim immediately accepted LaRosa's resignation. "You have been very valuable to the party, and I truly appreciate your service as treasurer," Al Rahim replied. On April 25th, local lawyer Shayla Matuka, representing Al Rahim, wrote to LaRosa regarding your resignation and refusal to return the CCDCC, that's Champaign County Democratic Central Committee, financial records and checkbook to the chair, Mariam R. Rahim. Matuka's letter contended that R. Rahim was lawfully elected party chairman on April 22nd and noted that LaRosa resigned your position as treasurer April 23rd. "Therefore, the CCDCC demands that you turn over the financial records to R. Rahim. You are not authorized to transfer financial records or checkbooks to anyone except Chair Mariam R. Rahim," Matuka wrote. But Champaign lawyer Glenn Stanko, that's S-T-A-N-K-O, representing LaRosa, said that Matuka's letter came, quote-unquote, too late. Stanko said that Champaign lawyer Matt Duco, D-U-C-O, sent an email to Jessica, advised her that he represented the Democratic Party, Ammons, and Ammons' treasurer, Deshaun Williams, demanded the financial records, and advised that a lawsuit would be quickly filed against Jessica if she did not do so. As a consequence of the Duco communication, Stanko said, LaRosa physically transferred the books and records in her possession to Williams. Matuka said Monday that she was retained by R. Rahim Democrats to write the demand letter to LaRosa, and that was my limited involvement in the dispute. "My hope is that they work it out, just being a Democrat," she said. Duco said that he does not represent the local Democratic Party, and I'm not representing anyone, and is not aware of any litigation. He declined to respond specifically to the LaRosa email threatening litigation, repeating that I'm not aware of any legal dispute. As for the police report, State's Attorney Julia Reed said, "I have not received a report about that from Champaign Police." Pursuing a criminal case would be problematic, because theft allegations require the intent to permanently deprive an individual or organization of property. In this case, two warring wings of the same political party are at odds over who is the legitimate chairwoman of the party, Ar-Rahim or Ammons. Party resources are now under Ammons' control and that of her treasurer, but still the property of the local Democratic Party. Ar-Rahim was elected party chairwoman in 2016 as part of an internal effort to oust then-incumbent chairman Al Klein. At the time, Ar-Rahim was an ally of Ammons, who helped lead the insurrection. Since then, however, they've had a parting of the ways, a dispute that divided party precinct committee members. It has led to considerable personal enmity and suspicion by Ar-Rahim supporters of Ammons and her husband, Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons. That suspicion was manifested when local committee woman Dolores Henry and Cynthia, or women Dolores Henry and Cynthia Fears, filed a post-election complaint against Aaron Ammons, alleging election irregularities, and requested a forensic audit of the March 17th primary election results. Writing in an April 29th letter, the Elections Board replied that it is not the prosecuting body for the allegations made against a county clerk. That duty falls to the local state's attorney. Henry and Fears complained that election judges were given locked ballot boxes at all 10 early voting centers, making it impossible for the election judges to determine the boxes were empty. Election judges who had experience said they had never been subjected to locked boxes. When judges asked why the boxes were locked, they were told it was a new policy, Henry and Fears wrote in their complaint. Aaron Ammons already has been chastised by the Election Board as a consequence of his decision to conduct an improper count of election ballots cast early. Regarding the election dispute, Reed said that her office plans to communicate with Henry and Fears to see if they wish to pursue the matter. If so, she said, her office would declare that it has a conflict of interest and ask the state appellate prosecutor's office to look into the accusations of impropriety. Just a few months ago, Reitz asked the appellate prosecutor to look into the alleged shoplifting of a purse by Carol Ammons. So far, there's been no decision made on how to proceed by the appellate prosecutor. Since then, Carol Ammons avoided any contact with the media where the subject might come up. Her husband has said the alleged shoplifting involved a misunderstanding and discouraged reporters from pursuing the matter. Jim Dye is a member of the News Gazette staff, and he can be reached by email at jdey@newsgazette.com or by phone at 217-351-5369. The next headline reads, today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for The Morning Show with State Treasurer Mike Frericks, and he checks in at 7:40 AM. Penny for your thoughts, Courage Connections, Elizabeth Cook, and Tammy Lemke visit at 10 a.m. And News Hour from 4 to 6 p.m. this evening. Guests include Julie Pride, Lauren Tate, and Drew Dickinson. To chime in, you can call 217-356-9397, or you can text the number 217-351-5357. On NewsGazette.com, inside Illini basketball, Scott Ritchie, NewsGazette beat writer on the Illini's two NBA draft prospects. It's still a small percentage chance, but what if Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn came back? Can I tell you with absolute certainty that maybe Kofi or Ayo will return? No, because no decision has been made. For our entire menu, visit our website and click on Podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. I'll resume shortly with part two, so please stay with me. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.